Hello and welcome to the Minimalist Moms Podcast. I'm Diane. I'm a mother of three living in Columbus, Ohio. I'm trying to make room in my life for what matters by getting rid of the clutter and living life with purpose. I hope you'll join me on the journey to think more and do with less. Linda, thank you so much for joining me again on the Minimalist Moms Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Diane. I'm excited to be back.
I am really happy to have you back. And it's funny, I think about you, this is probably weird, but I bet a lot of people think about you, but the no such thing as bad weather, I think about that all the time. And I'm like, oh, thanks, Linda. Thanks for writing that book. I think about it on the regular, whenever it's too hot or it's raining or it's too cold, all the things. I am like, thank you for writing that book. It changed my
life. Yeah, it's that inside, that inner voice that I talk about in the book too, that I'm hoping that my kids will have as they get older too. Mm-hmm. You know, when you grow up hearing that all the time, then I think you internalize it. And so it's great to hear that some of the readers of the book are doing it too, because I think we've, as a society, kind of gone away from that notion that you can be outside in most types of weather. I should say there are obviously exceptions, and we've gotten so comfortable with our climate controlled environment and our climate controlled existence that we kind of forget that kids grow up, people live in all kinds of climates and weather and are outside. And I think we could definitely benefit from doing a little more of that. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I was going to have you reintroduce yourselves for the listeners that hadn't heard that first conversation. We are talking about your book, but yeah, why don't you just go ahead, briefly introduce yourself. I'll make sure to connect our original episode in the show notes. And then I always ask if people consider themselves minimalists. So maybe just share a little bit more about that as well before we get into our conversation.
Yeah. So yeah, I am a writer and author of There's No Such Thing as Bad Weather, as you mentioned. And now I have a new book out called The Open Air Life, Discover the Nordic Art of Friluftsliv and Embrace Nature Every Day. I'm also a mom of two girls. I've lived in the US for 15 years, but I'm now back in Sweden, which is where I was born and raised. And I definitely consider myself a minimalist, and I think minimalism and Friluftsliv, which we'll talk more about, definitely have a lot of overlap. And I'd say I'm a minimalist for two main reasons. First one being for the environment, the sake of the environment, and the fact that we have finite resources and, you know, an increasing fragile situation with all the environmental challenges. And the second reason is for my mental health. I find that clutter really gives me brain fatigue. So so those are the two main reasons I'd say why I'm a minimalist.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, I'm trying to remember what book it was that I read. Nordic culture in general seems to live with less maybe than Americans as a generalization.
Yeah, as a generalization, I think you're right in terms of the sizes of our house. I think even when income goes up, people don't necessarily, but yeah, they might build slightly larger houses. But I think if you look at like the average square footage or whatever, I think we do live a little smaller here. And also I think the design is very influenced by these minimalist ideas. Everything is very sort of simplistic and very clean. I think a lot of people associate Scandinavian design with those traits, mm-hmm. And the sort of light colors and very sort of soothing environments. And I think part of it is too that, you know, we do try to bring nature inside as well with like plants and things mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, I really love it. I definitely tend to find myself drifting to that style. But I want to talk about your first book really touched on why we should spend more time outside. So before we get into this new book that you've written, I just wanted you to give a brief encouragement of why it's so important for why, and then maybe how people should spend more time outside. And then we'll get into the word, I want to not butcher it. The word that it's Friluftsliv. Is that how you say it?
That's pretty close.
Okay.
And don't worry, you're in good company. Everybody worries about butchering this word. Uh-huh. But yeah, Friluftsliv. So yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, I'll let you continue to be the one that says that, but just, yeah, just a brief encouragement. Yeah. Why and how should people spend more time outside? Why is it important?
Yeah. So I think the short answer here really is that it's good for us. We evolved in nature, we evolved outside. And that's why we are actually naturally just drawn to green spaces and blue spaces. They are life giving to us. So there's a, definitely just a, like an evolutionary reason for that. It's our home. And I think a lot of people can feel that, when they're outside and that they're feeling good. But I think in the past few decades, the research has also started to catch up, and we can, the research has now documented how it actually benefits our physical and mental health. For example, I know there are studies showing that it's more effective than antidepressants in terms of improving mood and reducing anxiety and depression. And then there are also, physical effects like that are also measurable, like our blood pressure goes down outside, stress levels go down, our cortisol production, which is related to stress. We get vitamin D, which is crucial to our immune system and all kinds of functions in our bodies. So just walking outside has so many physical benefits, like reducing the risk of type 2 diabetes and obesity and heart disease and several types of cancer as well. Mortality in general can, is reduced by being outside. So yeah, I think we can feel it instinctively, but now the research is also starting to catch up and showing us that it is better for our health.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that people are doing more research in this area. And I just like to look to the past at the way people live. I speak in generalizations when I say this, but I do think that curated lives that looked a little bit more like the past in that way, that we would be better off. I don't think progress with technology is necessarily the best thing that's happened. Again, speaking generally, there's wonderful things with progress, but in certain regards, I do think it makes us a less joyful, mentally healthy society.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it was very obvious during the pandemic when some places were had these lockdowns, like these really restrictive lockdowns when you couldn't even leave your home. And I mean, just seeing the mental health toll that it took. And research is starting to come out on that too. And I saw one study showing that people who were on lockdowns had a 50% higher risk of having mental health issues after the pandemic. So it was just a perfect storm of all kinds of factors, but it really showed how harmful it can be to for us not to be out there in nature.
If there's any bright side of what happened during that period of time, it was that awareness of how important nature was to us. And I think it really did, not to sound like I just feel so repetitive with what I speak about sometimes, but a lot of us changed our perspectives and even our lifestyles after that all happened. So I now want to talk about the word. I'm going to allow you to say it, the F word, the good F word. What
is it? The good F word. That's a good way of putting it. Friluftsliv.
Okay. So what is this?
Yeah. So I actually use the word or the term open air life in my book for this very reason. I don't want people to get hung up on the word and thinking that, oh man, there's no way I'm going to remember that or be able to say that. So we can stick with like open air life or hygge, which I'm sure you're familiar with, which is this big craze and still is, I suppose. It doesn't really have a literal translation in English, but I suppose you could compare it with outdoor recreation, but there are some fundamental differences. And for one, it's a whole lifestyle, and And the kind of a philosophy that revolves around spending time in nature, you know, as much time as possible in not just in nature, but also in the cultural landscape, for mental and physical wellness. And as opposed to outdoor recreation, then, which could that could include, you know, outdoor sports or, you know, like motorized activities like boat riding or ATVs and things like that. Friluftsliv is like non-competitive, non-motorized, and it's very much founded on the idea that you utilize like your nearby nature areas. It's all about finding nature in everyday life. So whatever nature that you have, that you can find like near your home, and it's typically pretty inexpensive as well. You don't need a bunch of gear. Like obviously, as with anything, like if you really get into camping or something like that, you can end up spending a lot of money. But compared with a lot of other activities, it is pretty inexpensive. And it also comes with a strong environmental awareness. That's an integral part of it as well. So it can be, you know, anything from like walking around your neighborhood to like hiking and camping in the mountains or wherever, foraging for wild edibles, like swimming, ice skating, cross-country skiing, kayaking, all kinds of activities that that are outside. But really the important thing is to connect with nature. So it's not what you do that is the most important. It's the fact that you sort of have this deeper connection with nature. And yeah, you can do it both in the city and in a rural area.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question for you, because a lot of the area that you're talking about for Nordics, you have a lot of land with a smaller population, and we live a little bit more, we have more of a condensed lifestyle here. And yeah, I look at just the plots of lands that our homes are on, and it is hard to feel maybe as open, or that we have the access to open air and I don't know, just nature in general. I would say that that's probably harder for some people. So what's your encouragement there? And you gave us some tips on how to use this in our daily lives, but yeah, what are your tips to people that maybe feel like they live in the big city? It's not going to happen.
Right. Right. So I think a big part of Friluftsliv is to rethink the way we look at nature, because obviously, so the image that usually comes to mind is wilderness, right? Which in the U.S. is that, I mean, we got tons of that, but most of that is out west, and it's not exactly accessible to people on a daily basis, right? A lot of people do live in cities, and this is where city planning and comes into play, where your green spaces become really important. And a lot of cities do have parks and places where you can go. So it doesn't have to be like super wild nature. Even in the cities, you can see nature. It's everywhere around us, even in like the rain that falls on our cheeks when we're out experiencing rainy weather. It's in the wind that, you know, ruffles the leaves in the trees. And it's about honing our ability to see nature everywhere around us and feeling like we're a part of it. So definitely like utilizing green spaces in the city as well. And I get that not everybody has that sort of perfect place, or might not feel like they do, but my advice is always to start where you are and use what you have and do what you can, which is, it's actually an Arthur Ashe quote, and he was talking about tennis, but I think it can be applied to Friluftsliv as well. So I'm
thinking, sorry to cut you off, but I'm thinking even in New York City, I love when we're dining outside, which I know that really did during the pandemic, that people had to go outside to eat there. But something as simple as that, when I work from coffee houses, I mean, I was out there on Friday, and I want to say it was in the low 50s, high 40s. And I was bundled up. I had my hot coffee, and it just felt so good.
Yes.
To be outside, to breathe in that fresh air first thing in the morning. And there is a difference. There is a notable difference.
Yes.
And even something as simple as that.
Right. And that's why friluftsliv emphasizes it's about being outside in the natural and cultural landscape, the cultural landscape then being man-made elements as well. And this is, like I mentioned with the city planning, I think as more and more people start to appreciate this outdoor lifestyle, I think cities are really going to have incentives to create the kind of environment that people want to be in, like a city, you know, cities with bike lanes and urban trails and green rooftops and things like that, that really bring nature into the cities. So, but, you know, the first step is just getting out there, and then you can take it from there.
Funny. I am a photographer. So I had a shoot last night in the neighborhood that I went to. It's a newer neighborhood. They're building in there right now. And the phrase of the neighborhood was live with nature. So, I mean, I think that people are, I don't want to say it's trendy. I just think people are starting to recognize that this is what people want, even if they're living closer to the city, that they want to be near nature. There's something about it. At the end of a long work day, like you want to have that access to access to nature is so important.
And then, but then it's also worth mentioning that, you know, the wilder a place is, the more restorative it will be as well. I mean, it is important to get away from the city as well, sometimes, but it might not, obviously it's not something that you can probably do on a daily basis, but if you can do it every once in a while, you know, that's worth a lot too. But you mentioned New York City, and I've been there a couple of times, and I love Central Park. And also the last time I was there, I visited, I walked along the High Line, and I loved it. I really loved how it made me feel like I was in a different place almost. It was like, you know, both the elevation, I felt like I was literally closer to the stars, and then all the native plants along the trail. I thought it was really, really a fantastic example of what can happen when organizations and volunteers in the city really put their minds together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes me think. We have an area close to us, and a lot of the buildings are just empty, that no businesses have taken over those spaces. And I'm like, we should just knock down all of these things and just plant some grass, replant. Yeah. I mean, in 5 to 10 years, this could be a totally different space that is usable, and it's just not ugly with all these old worn out building. I don't know. It just, I'm like, if they're going to remain empty, what is the point? This is just an eyesore.
Yeah. I think, I mean, a few years ago, I felt like there was a bit of a movement going on for like pocket parks, creating like small, like utilizing small empty spaces in cities. I'm not sure where that's at right now, but I know that there has been a bit of a movement for that.
That's a good idea to maybe take that to a city council, like a local city council. That's a great idea.
Today's episode is sponsored by MyLifeInABook.com. This is probably the most thoughtful gift I've ever come across for parents or grandparents for the winter holidays as families get together to celebrate. It's basically a very powerful way to connect emotionally with them, preserve the most precious memories, and show them that you really care. And best of all, it's an instantaneous gift. I've tried it with my mother, and she totally loved it. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com lets you choose from a list of thought-provoking questions or even write your own that gets sent to your relative by email. Your relative writes their answer, and you can choose to add a meaningful picture. This happens every week, and at the end of 1 year, all their stories get combined in a beautiful keepsake book that you can store your relative's memories forever and pass them on to future generations, which is printed and sent to you. You can request as many copies as you want and even get it in audio format as well. With MyLifeInABook.com, you can give those you love most a personal gift that tells them they're meaningful to you in all future generations. To save $10 off your first purchase, use discount code MINIMALIST. That's MINIMALIST to get $10 off MyLifeInABook.com. Check out the link in the show notes for more. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you more about MyLifeInABook.com. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you choose to ask. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. One of the challenges I face with being a minimalist is wanting to be as intentional as possible about the things that I am buying. I do understand that I live in a world where I can't completely avoid purchases. There are birthdays, there are holidays, there are the celebrations. But if I can be more intentional about gift giving, it's so important to me. I've had the experience to gift one to my mom, and being able to gift that to her seemed more significant than something that wasn't as sentimental to her. So if this sounds like a gift that you'd be interested in giving, check out mylifeinabook.com and use code MINIMALIST at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code MINIMALIST for 10% off today. Are you ready to take your gardening game to the next level this year? If you're anything like my husband and me, you've been getting your hands dirty in the garden, learning the ropes, and dreaming of a bountiful harvest. Well, let me tell you about Coast of Maine planting soil, our secret weapon for a thriving garden. Everything grown in Coast of Maine soil is organic and safe for your family and friends right out of the garden. Their living soils are carefully crafted to enhance soil structure, provide essential nutrients, and promote robust plant growth. With a diverse portfolio of products for all your gardening needs, they're rooted in sustainable practices and a commitment to organic excellence. Coast of Maine believes in nurturing relationships with local retailers. The products are carried by local retail partners who can provide advice and insight not found in big box stores. Coast of Maine knows from beginner to expert, anyone who takes a hand to the land has something to offer the growing community of gardeners everywhere. Their products make organic gardening simple, approachable gardening for everyone. So let's get growing. Visit coastofmaine.com to find a local retailer near you. Coast of Maine, like the state with an E.com. This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. I'm so happy to partner with ByHeart because their goal is to create a future where all parents feel amazing about feeding their baby, no matter how they do it. Their mission is simple: make the best infant formula in the world. Let me tell you a little bit more. ByHeart's patented protein blend gets closest to breast milk by including the two most abundant proteins in breast milk, plus whole and partially broken down proteins for a nutritious blend that's gentle on tummies. ByHeart ran a clinical trial where they compared their formula to a leading infant formula, improved benefits like less spit up, easier digestion, and so much more. ByHeart is leading the ways in a lot of ways. They're the only U.S.-made infant formula to use organic, grass-fed, whole milk, not skim. It's the only new infant formula brand to add a comparison to breast milk in their clinical trial. And ByHeart is the first infant formula company to receive Clean Label Project's Purity Award. So are you curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code MINIMALIST for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply.
So throughout your experience living in Sweden, and even when you were back here in Indiana, you have learned some skills, and you talk about a lot of those in your new book. And so I just wanted you to, as we kind of wrap up this conversation, leave listeners with some of your top skills that you learned, or maybe what would be most beneficial for them going into nature. I know that on this list you have, you said picking mushrooms or edible berries, and I got into that over the last year, and that is so much fun. But what is your suggestion there?
My suggestion would be to start with the skills. Well, first of all, look at what your interests are. What do you feel passionate about? Like, I started foraging for mushrooms just a few years ago. Before that, I wasn't really into it at all. But all of a sudden, you know, I just had a passion for that. But the second thing is, I recommend that people learn some of the basic survival skills, because they are also important in friluftsliv. So like how to make a good fire, how to, you know, purify water if you're going to be out camping and things like that. How to build, I mean, you don't have to build your own shelter, but just when you're out camping, you actually utilize a lot of basic survival skills that are good in any situation. And I don't know, I think it might feel a little more fragile here in Europe right now, just because of the vicinity to Russia and everything. But we are really in a situation where our government is telling us to really be prepared for, you know, whatever. And I think it's a good idea wherever you live, because we're also seeing natural disasters in a lot of places. And if you know some of these basic friluftsliv skills, you're also going to be very like well prepared for something like that, if that happens. So yeah, like I said, you know, making fire, purify water, foraging is fun too. But it's in a survival situation, it's more important to actually bring or to have enough food with you, than foraging. You usually can't rely on foraging alone, in a survival situation, but yeah, definitely. Yeah. In any skills, that have to do with backpacking or camping, I think, are a good place to start.
I don't want to share the name here. I can't decide if I want to share the name on my podcast, just because I don't want this guy to get overrun and then I'm never going to be able to get into him again. I took a survival course here in Columbus. I know that there are a handful here, but this man taught me and a few of my female friends how to start fire, how to build a shelter, if you're in dire need. Yeah. He said to use the cattails that grow along ponds are a really great way to have a torch, and dip them in sap from a tree. You can do that. And it'll last for, I can't remember how long he said it will last, but quite some time. And I'm trying to think of the last thing he taught us. Oh, just how to make rope with, again, I can't remember. I'm like, it's been so helpful for me.
Yeah, like straws. Like grass straws.
Grass straws. Yeah. And obviously these are things that you're going to have to forage for, but just some of these basic little skills, that is life-saving. Everyone should have some of these basic skills. I mean, I feel like, again, looking to the past, we used to learn these things in school. And now if we have the grocery store taken away, or if things got really dire.
I think people are more prepared now than we used to be. And also, like I said, natural disasters and things like that. So definitely always a good thing to always be prepared. The old scout saying, it holds true. Mm-hmm. Be prepared. And the thing is too, I find it very empowering. So I think it's fun for that reason. I don't necessarily do it like thinking of disaster, because I feel like that kind of ruins the nature experience a little bit maybe, but in the back of my head, I know that these are good things to good skills to have.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was there, I purchased the book 101 Skills You Need to Survive in the Woods, and it's by author Kevin Estella. So I'll link that in the show notes, and that's helpful too, just for some basic ideas if you don't have the ability to go take a class. But I do highly recommend, I'm going to share his name just because he was such a wonderful man. His name is Kevin of the Tao Wadi Nature School, and that's out in, I think, the Canal Winchester area of Columbus. So for anyone listening local, I highly recommend him. He was fabulous and really knowledgeable. Well, do you have anything else that you wanted to share of why we would want to pick up a copy of your new book?
I think my book is perfect. You mentioned my first book was kind of a manifesto for why we should get outside. And I think this book gives, some practical tips and inspiration for that, as well as some of the whys, but also definitely some hows. So I hope it will be inspirational. It makes a great Christmas gift as well.
Yeah, especially as we're starting to, again, get some ideas of how we want to, I'm not necessarily all about New Year's resolutions, but I definitely think it's a good time of year to reflect and what we want to do differently. So, Well, where can they buy a copy of this new book if they want to do so and connect with you online?
Yeah, sure. So the book is available, I think, just about any place that sells books online, Amazon for sure, bookshop.org, and also some physical bookstores. And if you want to see more behind the scenes activity from my life, then Instagram or Facebook are the best places to go. I go under the handle Rain or Shine Mama with two M's. Mm-hmm. And I also have a blog called rainorshinemama.com where I share some tips and tricks for open air life and getting outside with kids.
Yeah. I feel, I can't remember. I'm pretty sure it was you that went camping in the snow. I feel like it wasn't too long ago. And you
that was last winter.
Yeah.
I did a challenge to sleep outside for at least one night every month of the year.
Uh-huh.
And that was it was a fun way to challenge myself. It was my first time and it was actually, it was a lot better than I expected. So I'm doing it again this year.
Yes. That is such a great idea. I'm like, maybe when my kids are all over the age of 10, I'll go and do that. That is such a great, that's a great goal to have for sure.
Yes.
Linda, as we wrap up this conversation, I'm going to ask you quickly the two questions I ask every guest. And this is more quick fire questions. But the first one is, what has been a beneficial resource to you that you'd like to share with the listeners?
So I want to share the book I'm reading right now, which is Our Wild Calling by Richard Loeb. He's been an inspiration from day one that I started blogging. And this book is all about our relationship with animals. It's just a really cool book with some fresh perspectives. And also a shout out to 1000 Hours Outside, which we've been talking a lot about in our family lately. I have an 11-year-old and a 14-year-old now. So getting them motivated to go outside is sort of, we're going into a different phase right now. It's not, I can't just be like, well, let's go outside and play, because they're older and they need a little more. They want to get challenged. So
yeah.
So for next year, we're going to do this challenge to be outside for 1,000 hours. And I think it's going to be great. I'm just excited that they were really into it. So
I love Jenny and the movement she started there. It's so simple, but yeah, her encouragement has really benefited my life as well. So she's a great resource. All right. My last question is, what is something that you can't stop talking about?
So yeah, I mentioned it already, but like foraging right now, it's fall here and the woods are just full of mushrooms. So that is my latest obsession. Like I even started eating mushrooms. I didn't even eat mushrooms before, but now it's like, I can't stop looking for them. So I'll go out for a walk and then all of a sudden I'll just like, veer off into the woods because I've got my mushroom radar on and, it's so much fun, like learning new varieties. And, I posted a reel about it on my Instagram the other day and I got such great response. And I see there are so many people who want to do this, but they're worried about the toxicity of some of the species. And so I want to like encourage people to learn more about it and really, you know, it can definitely be done safely. You just need, once again, it's those basic skills. It's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was going to say, what's your best tip for not picking something that's poisonous?
Yeah. So my number one is to go with somebody who is experienced. That's my first choice. It's always best to learn firsthand from somebody. But if you don't know anybody that forages for mushrooms, then I would go online, maybe join a forum. There are tons of, you know, like for online forums for this. Mm-hmm. And I would start with just one or two species that are easy to recognize and don't have that don't easily get mixed up with toxic species, because there are several varieties that are very, very hard to mix up. So
chicken of the woods, do you guys have that one that grows there?
You know, I'm gonna have to Google that because I don't know what that one's called in Swedish. Okay. And I don't remember seeing it or hearing about it in Indiana. It was all about morels there.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, this is like a stacked orange mushroom that last fall we were with someone that really knew what she was doing, and she found it. We came home, we washed it off and whatnot, and then we deep fried it, and it tastes like chicken. Actually, it kind of hated me afterwards because I was just thinking about, I don't know, it was like a weird texture thing, but it was a really cool experience. And then I lastly wanted to shout out, in Columbus there's a lady named, her Instagram handle is @blackforager, and she is constantly putting out information of, she lives in the city and she is able to forage all throughout her city, and it's really, really cool. She has great videos and encouragement on there. So that's @black.
Yeah.
I highly recommend that as a resource as well.
Yeah, sounds like a good place to start.
Yeah. Well, Linda, thank you again for joining me. I really appreciate, like I said, your books that you're writing. It is an inspiration to so many of us moms too, mm-hmm. just feeling like we can't get outside. And I just really appreciate that you've taken the time to investigate all this and research and write these. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me on.
What did you think of the episode? If you enjoyed this conversation, I want to encourage you to leave a rating and review if you haven't done so yet. Leaving a rating and review is the best way you can help this podcast continue to succeed and grow. Again, thank you to everyone who supports the Minimalist Moms by listening, leaving those rating and reviews, or following along on social media at Minimalist Moms Podcast. As always, I invite you to keep the conversation going at minimalistmomspodcast.com, and there you can find links to the Instagram account, my Facebook page, and where you can find me all around the web. Thank you for joining up on this journey. I wish you a lovely week as you think more and do with less.